listening to ThePorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast podcast, brought to you by First Draft Taproom and Kitchen, located in the heart of Denver's Rhino Art District at 1309 26th Street, featuring a pour-your-own draft system with over 40 incredible beers to sample from. And OnTap Credit Union, crafting individual financial solutions for people who brew great beer, the breweries that produce great beer, and the communities where they all reside and do business. The Porchcast is also supported by Latitude Financial Group, which provides financial planning and investment strategies so you can start saving money and begin lowering taxes. And finally, Made by Chalk, who can help with all of your brewery branding, logo design, and website design needs. And now, the Porchcast.
All right, everyone, and welcome to episode 46 of the Porchcast. We are broadcasting from Call to Arms Brewery, brewing here in the Tennyson Street District of Denver. It is a sad and somewhat sweet farewell.
Dreary day.
It's a dreary day indeed, Hunter. As we say goodbye to one of our preeminent Porchcast colleagues, Jesse Brookstein is going to be leaving us after this episode.
I'm going to miss you guys very much.
Jesse, why? Why must you leave us?
Why?
He wants to be a college kid again.
Yes, yeah, the great Midwest is calling.
The Midwest is calling. That's not something we hear too often.
If you've listened to enough of these Porchcasts, you know that me and Sly over here end up talking about the Midwest at least every other episode.
We got some ties.
And I've always really enjoyed going up there. I spent a lot of time in Madison, oddly enough, of all the cities in the world to visit. I've been there four times now, and I went up for a packaging course for 2 weeks when I worked at Avery, and I got to spend a lot of time there. And
you fell in love with cheese curds.
Luckily we have those in upstate New York.
Hell yeah, cheese curds.
Wisconsin does better than upstate.
That's squeaky cheese.
Yeah. And the opportunity came to make a little transition, and so I'm going to make the leap.
Really, you're just going out there to start the Porchcast New Glarus edition. Is that what's happening?
There's a good chance.
Yeah.
We've been in talks.
Well, once again, we're really bummed that this is going to be the last episode for Jesse Brookstein, at least for now. Sure, there are many reunion shows to come, but we're also really excited to welcome Sammy Hartman, who actually was just on the last edition of the Porchcast.
Hello.
She's got big shoes to fill, but Sammy's going to be joining us on a more regular basis here as a co-host.
She didn't know it, but that was a tryout.
Formal tryout.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Hunter was the lone dissenting voice in our
You were number 18, though. Lucky number 18.
That's actually my lucky number.
We had 17 others turn us down.
Oh, shit.
And we ended up at Sammy.
Typical wild card.
Typical wild card.
Well, before we get into the mix of everything, I wanna say this is our last episode in 2017. It's been a crazy year. We've recorded a hell of a lot of podcasts, but we've had a lot of fun doing so. And so I want to take a moment. I want to go around. It's been holiday season. How was everybody's holidays? Any interesting stories? Anything crazy that happened to you while you all were celebrating the Christmas and
yes.
Hanukkah holidays?
I saw somebody eat shit on a motorcycle in the snow.
Oh, no.
Into the snow?
And they were trying to get home as it was dumping. And they're taking a left turn. Wipeout.
Ooh.
Yeah, I got Hunter's.
Yeah.
Did
you
just like,
no, I started to
and then
stop.
They died.
I got Hunter's memory is of someone experiencing excruciating pain.
Potentially dying.
It looked fun, but you know, there were two cars also that stopped, and so I decided, man, fuck it, I kept driving.
Like the good citizen you are.
Yeah.
Two other people stopped, he's good.
Yeah. Oh, he looks fine. I'm
craziest
just
thing
driving.
I saw over the holidays. Yeah.
Hunter feels a bump underneath his car, he's like, whatever.
Yeah, the guy behind me stopped, he's good. Jesse's taking a note now. Don't ride motorcycles near Hunter.
How was your break?
It was pretty mellow. Yeah. I always try to keep everything pretty relaxed. Me and my mom typically watch Dumb and Dumber and Slapshot and
Bad Santa.
Know, Days of Confused. We did watch Bad Santa, actually. Just drink a lot of beers and eat a lot of food, man.
Awesome.
Pretty relaxing. Sweatpants all day long.
Nice. I went back to Kentucky, actually, for a few days and got the opportunity to revisit some of my local breweries, Country Boy Brewing, shout out over there. But also visited a really surprising find in Lexington called Rock City Brewing, based out of a quarry, a former quarry. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, it's a rock quarry, former rock quarry, now houses a brewery. Really small operation. When I visited, it was there just after their 1 year anniversary. Wow. But they're producing some really great stuff out there. So
that reminds me. Have you been to Caveman Brewing?
Caveman?
Caveman.
No,
it's literally like a cave.
In a cave?
Yeah, yeah,
really? Is that here?
Where's that?
It's up upstate. You've never been upstate New York?
New York?
In the caves.
No way, I don't, when I go home, I don't spend too much time in caves.
It's a fucking myth, but somebody is definitely going to start a cave brewery at some point.
Okay. This guy is on fire today.
I just ate fiery habanero salsa.
Yeah.
Hunter is dropping some serious fake news right now.
I'm actually happy end of the year. I feel, I don't know. There's something, I got like the new year bug.
New year, new me?
Yeah, new year, new me bug.
Yeah. Sammy, what about you? Anything interesting happened over your break?
No, nothing interesting happened. I drank some beer. I hung out with my parents, my brother, my sister-in-law. We always watch Muppet Christmas Carol.
Hell yeah.
Which is
absolutely
the
amazing.
Superior of all
the,
of the Christmas
movies. Light the lamp, not the rat.
Light the lamp, not the rat. Tiny Tim, who did not die, is the best line of the entire movie. I did that, drank some wine. Like, it was an easy, laid back Christmas.
Yeah.
I gotta say, like, between Netflix and HBO, like, the Christmas movie selection sucks. So,
well, but yeah, Muppet
Christmas
Carol was
Christmas
on.
Carol's one of the best.
Yes. Netflix.
I did watch Kristen Christmas Inheritance. Awesome. So yeah. Good. Christmas Kiss 1, pretty good. Christmas 2, not as good.
Not.
But
really bad.
Netflix, they do so many things right, and they do Christmas movies really wrong.
I know,
I couldn't believe the holiday.
We typically, like, I have it on a DVD somewhere, but last year I definitely bought it, like, on demand, you know, paid $5.99 Muppet Christmas Carol.
Really?
This year, yeah. HBO,
well worth it.
Free.
Right.
So worth it.
You don't own it?
No, I own it somewhere.
I thought
like,
you were a true fan.
No, it's like in a box.
Hunter
somewhere.
Has the VHS
have,
and the DVD.
I actually have an extra copy.
No, I definitely, I have them both. I just don't want to, like, find the box.
Just making
the
sure.
I got
you're actually a proud supporter if you know you own it. But you still rented it anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you guys of the mindset that Gremlins is a Christmas movie or not a Christmas
ooh,
movie?
Ooh, absolutely.
Sure.
Much like Die Hard, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Die Hard isn't, though. It has to have a Christmas
weapon.
Theme.
I think there's real contention over this. Hunter's not happy.
House
like, I've agreed that Home Alone is a Christmas
Home
movie.
Home Alone?
Duh.
Yes,
I have
of course.
But not Home Alone, but not Home Alone 2.
It's not really about Christmas.
Fucking Home Alone is a Christmas movie.
It is. I've agreed. I'm on the side of Christmas movie, but it's debated, heavily debated.
Jesus.
It wouldn't be a Porchcast if we didn't get into a 15-minute debate on
whether
Gremlins
not.
And Home Alone are Christmas movies.
Ain't
Sam,
Die Hard.
I know you went back to the Midwest. You visited Michigan for a little while. How was your trip?
It was nice. Got to visit some of the old haunts, visit some new haunts. I got inappropriately drunk for a friend's birthday party and ended up buying 2 bottles of Canadian breakfast stout that I didn't intend to buy.
All right.
And then I had to find a way to send them home because I didn't want to drink them while I was there. And it was a good time. I surprised my nephew, surprised my sister.
I'm surprised you didn't chug the CBS on the plane while you were on the runway.
I mean, I couldn't bring it with me on my carry-on.
Sure.
That's not to say it won't get chugged at some point in the near future.
No.
Oh, God.
It's still up for debate there.
Please don't do that to CBS. It doesn't deserve. Maybe it does deserve.
It doesn't stand for chugged breakfast out.
Yeah, chugged breakfast out. Absolutely. I think one of the more bizarre things that happened to me while I was on break, I always love going back home because my parents are finally reaching that bizarre phase of their life where they say really weird, random things. And the one that I love most that greeted me when I returned home this time was my mom was telling me about how my dad asked her whether she would ever get a tattoo of his name. And she was like, why would I do that? What if I get mad at you? And maybe I want to get a divorce. And he's like, well, you can just change it from I love Gus to I love guns. And they're definitely not conservative, nor are they gun-toting people at all. So... just the vision of my mom having an I Love Guns tattoo on her is just baffling to me.
I mean,
so,
do you think, is that like the kind of comment that would just kind of come out like that, or is that like a premeditated
thought?
I
think
thought?
He thought about that.
Yeah,
I was thinking. Yeah.
I think he probably
he has a backup
through
plan.
The motions.
Yeah. There's a definite plan B there.
Oh, man. Well, anyway, I want to jump into last year we had our big culminating episode at Avanti. We had a lot of fun kind of looking back at 2016 last year. This year we're going to look back at 2017 with some of our best ofs. We're also going to take some bold predictions and look back at some of the big news stories that happened this past year. Before we do that, Jesse, you know, I think it's fitting. You know, we're broadcasting from Call to Arms. Really sad to see you departing this place, but I'm drinking an Amigos Borrachos, which is one of the first beers I had here when I walked in and visited Call to Arms for the first time.
Clintonian, also nice. Also an oldie but goodie.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to think it's already been 2.5 years since we opened, 4.5 years since we wrote the business plan. It's definitely, I think it's kind of sinking in more and more each day that I'm walking away. Only got 2 days left here. Really, I'm bummed to leave. So many good friends, so many great colleagues I've met, and the craft beer scene here in Colorado is so supportive. I'm excited to see what's going on in Wisconsin. You know, I've worked in beer in upstate New York, but never as tightly as here in Colorado. So I'm really interested to see how they connect in Wisconsin and other states, and how they, if they have breweries from Ratio and Call to Arms come together every month and do, you know, Porchcast together, if they have that camaraderie. So, but I'm going to miss the hell out of my business partners and all the staff here, and I'm going to miss the free CTA IPA and Amigos Borrachos. Hopefully they'll still give me $1 off, like American Homebrewers discount when I come back in or something. But
now, be honest with us.
The sucker free price.
Are you leaving because Coors finally did cash that check for you guys?
Dude.
Is this what happened? Are you all taking a giant payday and just walking away from it all? Is this what's...
Because I had vacation in Madison, Wisconsin.
I would. Perhaps, like, the greatest and worst thing
did
was
you just buy New Glarus with all
that? We did!
Surprise!
The big breaking news, but no, I wish we had gotten that $1.1 billion they promised us time and time. That's not true. Sorry, Coors. But no, that was a lot of fun. A lot of those fun campaigns I'm going to miss a lot. It's been great having that creative freedom here, but hopefully I can find a brewery out in Wisconsin that is willing to dress somebody up in a turtleneck and a camel hair blazer, and if not, maybe we'll have to start Call to Arms Part 2.
But, absolutely. Yeah. Now, what many of our listeners probably don't realize, taking a little trip down memory lane, Jesse Brookstein actually first appeared on the Porchcast when it was an entirely different Porchcast. We first broadcasted from Buena Vista, Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
During the Gentlemen of the Road stopover tour, probably at around 1 a.m.
It's probably about 1.
Yeah.
Yep.
There might have been some things consumed.
Definitely a thing or two consumed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was definitely one of those lost midnight podcasts, late night podcasts that maybe the world has never seen, nor will they ever. But that was really our first introduction, and I think it was... Porchcast love at first sight.
Well, we met up under the Avery tent,
yes.
I believe, and I think it was one of those things where, you know, when you're singing in the shower or you've recorded a song to yourself, it sounds so great at the time, and apparently you listen to it after and are like, let's try to do this in a more professional setting.
Yeah.
So we did like 3 Call to Arms podcasts when we first opened, and then Tristan reached out, and he had things way more put together than I did on the Porchcast podcast front, and then Hunter came along and
shot us back down a few notches.
Yeah, Corey Pelican there for an episode at STEM. And then Sly came in and saved the day, and Sammy's going to hopefully kick Hunter out altogether.
Yeah, we're
going
to.
It's a plan.
Fine. We're going to try to
carry the whole goal, just to edge Hunter out over time.
No, but it's truly been a tremendous ride. I never would have expected the Porchcast to grow as quickly as it has, but I think a lot of that has been a testament to your contribution. So we're going to miss you a ton.
I'll miss you too.
Yeah.
I really love the heck out of you guys. We'll come out to Wisconsin. We'll do one.
Yeah, absolutely.
On a canoe or something.
Hunter literally poured one out into his salsa.
It's actually an excellent shot.
I know. I thought that was going everywhere.
He's like, I actually need it to cool down.
While many of you out there are stowing away bottles of bourbon barrel-aged stouts, lambics, and other wilds, it's equally important to stow some money away for a rainy day. Saving money and paying off debts are two of the biggest New Year's resolutions, so do it the smart way. Go to latitudefinancial.com, start saving money and lowering your taxes today. Go to latitudefinancialgroup.com to schedule a complimentary meeting now. Once again, that's latitudefinancialgroup.com. Made by Chalk specializes in creating brand experiences for the craft brewing industry. From product packaging to websites, apps, and events, Chalk services are tailored for independently owned craft breweries, maltsters, and industry-related consumer products. If you're looking for premium branding for your brewery or a new concept for your web design needs, visit madebychalk.com. Once again, that's madebychalk.com.
Well, let's jump into some news real quick. One of the things I want to touch on real quick is I thought one of the more interesting and unique stories that came out last night was Scofflaw, a brewery out of Atlanta, Georgia, is doing their funny take on the Bowl Championship Series, which is the college football playoffs. They actually invited three other breweries to kind of mirror the four football teams that are participating in the playoffs this year. And the football team that actually ends up winning is going to be the mirror of that is that brewery will get to host a collaboration brew. So American Solera out of Oklahoma is going to be represented by Oklahoma's football team. Scofflaw will be represented by Georgia, of course. Birds Fly South out of South Carolina is going to be represented by Clemson. And then Alabama will be represented by Good People Brewing.
Roll Tide.
So whichever team ends up winning the football championship series, that brewery will host a collaboration brew with all the other breweries participating. And those losing breweries will have to wear the jersey of the winning team. What do you guys think about this? Do you all know anything about these breweries? Have you guys heard much about them, about the participating breweries?
I actually don't know that much about them, though they sound very artistic names. I'm impressed with the naming.
Yeah, American Solera.
I know American Solera, yeah.
American Solera is fantastic. Birds Fly South has been one of the kind of breweries on the rise as of late. They ended up hosting kind of the alternative to the Wicked Weed Invitational back when all the breweries pulled out of that. So they've been doing some tremendous stuff. Scofflaw, I got to try a lot of them out here during GABF. They do tremendous hazy IPAs, but they also do a variety of very experimental stuff. Really impressive. Well, and good People Brewing out of Alabama. I actually met that entire team out at Bonnaroo one year.
Really?
They're making some really killer beers too. So
are they on the funk haze strain as well? Or?
They're more on like the traditional styles, a little bit of a modern twist, kind of like ratio. But yeah, they're doing some really fun stuff too. So I think that this kind of campaign speaks exactly to the testament of the beer industry. Taking collaboration, giving it a little bit of a unique twist to it. I love this take on college football. It's kind of what we were founded on in a similar Grantland style of weaving in sports and beer.
That's
now,
cool.
I do want to jump right into our 2017 recap. It's been a crazy year for beer. Lots of stuff happening in the news in terms from the very beginning. We were hit early on with the Wicked Weed buyout in May. That kind of dominated the headlines for a long time, especially with all the breweries pulling out of Wicked Weed's Invitational. But then we also got into stuff like Fort Collins Brewing being acquired by Red Truck, AB buying a minority stake in Rape Beer, which actually happened last October, but it wasn't announced and released until earlier this year. We also had Lagunitas acquiring Shorts, Sapporo acquiring Anchor Steam, Constellation buying Funky Buddha, Green Flash opening up a location in Lincoln, Nebraska, New Belgium acquiring Magnolia Brewing, and then we saw some major layoffs from Anheuser-Busch, laying off around 400 employees, and then we kind of capped off the year with the big news that Avery was selling a minority stake to Mal San Miguel, same company that owns Founders, a minority stake in Founders. So, looking back, what were some of the biggest headlines that caught your all's eye out of that group?
I mean, I think Avery had to hit, me so closely. I think we kind of saw the writing on the wall ourselves when you take out such a big investment and a,
especially for opening up such a large facility, multi-million dollar
facility. $30 million facility at a time when regional breweries are on a decline, you know?
Yeah.
And it's I don't know if that's going to be the course of the future of craft beer. I think there's a lot to find out, but you know a lot of these breweries' numbers are out there for other accountants and other... I mean, everyone still forgets that like a lot of these PE firms have their hands in a lot of breweries and stuff, so...
It's interesting. It made me wonder right away if that's like the end, like the death of craft, like the term craft beer. Because everyone, this is a brewery that everyone is still going to call a craft brewery, even though technically Avery is not. They're no longer a craft brewery.
Right.
Yeah, by the Brewers Association's definition.
Right, they're not a craft brewery.
But I think you make a really good point, Hunter. I think
that changed altogether.
Yeah, I think this completely changes the game in a lot of ways because Avery, for such a long time, has been... you know, staunchly independent. And I think, you know, in everyone's mind, Avery's still going to be this craft brewery. It's still going to be representative of what craft beer strives to be. And so I think there's still going to be a lot of people who are, you know, just going to follow the trend of saying like, oh, well, Brewers Association doesn't count them as a craft brewer, so they don't belong anymore. But I think in most people's eyes who truly do understand the industry,
the direction it's going.
Do
you see it almost as like a tipping point of where craft is now going to be more of like a marketing term versus actual like designated label type thing?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm sure the Brewers Association now is, I would almost guarantee it, is talking, they're discussing about changing the percentage of what you can sell at a brewery and still be considered a craft brewery because of Avery. They're probably going to look now and be like, well, should we change it to 30%?
Well, they look into it being like, all right, is the label what we need to designate it as? You know, is the label of craft, is that is that the hinging point at this point?
Well, you bring up another interesting point, Sam, because I think another headline that we didn't touch on earlier was the big introduction of the independent label that debuted this year.
Yeah.
You know, it's... I think the BA is doubling down on this push for independence, whereas, you know, I think the shift in direction is... you know, independence, yes, is very important, but also, you know, quality and who we represent and what our beer is all about, it's kind of a different designation, especially after the Avery move. So I think, you know, we're working on a bigger piece that kind of takes a closer look at that. But, you know, if Walmart, for example, the definition of corporate America, were to come out and buy 24% stake of a brewery, that brewery would still be considered independent craft brewery, as oddly as that sounds. And so, is that right? I'm pretty sure most people would take a look at that and, judging by a rationality test, say, no, that's not right. But, you know, that's the current designation that the Brewers Association has set forth.
I feel like this topic alone is so... so interesting and so complex it would take a 2-hour podcast in and of itself, and so many beers, and we'd end up arguing each other at the end of the night. But like, does anyone think of founders and not like to think about them as a foreign owned entity or like partially owned? I know,
and that to me, maybe that's just the blinders I have since I lived 2 miles away from the brewery for so many years. Like when Avery, I know they got shit for it when San Miguel whatever bought their 30% stake,
right?
So now that the Avery talk is kind of like this, if it is this tipping point, I don't know. I just, it's a matter of where you pay a lot of attention. I happen to pay a lot of attention to my places back home that I always liked and cherished.
Right.
And to me, when they got that 30% stake bought, I was like, you know what? They're still founders. Their beer to this date hasn't changed a lick. And I will continue to buy it and drink it because it still tastes good. And I mean, they were the first like real brewery that I ever really latched onto.
Yeah, and to their credit, I think the BA personally has done a really good job of adapting to the craft beer landscape. So I don't know. They've been really like, they've put their heels in when people have wanted to change like beer guidelines for GABF. I don't know if they'll change the 25% or how they'll change that designation, but at the same time, like, I feel like they're always talking about these things, right? I feel like these are topics that they really care about.
Oh, and absolutely.
It's really interesting to see, like, over the last 5 years, their top 20 list of, like, largest breweries, how like so many names have just dropped off, and maybe number 25 is like number 10 now.
Right.
Partly because of growth, but partly because so many of these bigger brands like the Lagunitas and the Averys and Founders have all dropped off that list. So yeah. I don't know. Is that list representative of craft beer anymore? And then the argument is Avery craft beer? Again, it could be a two-hour conversation.
Really can be. Because the Brewers Association will have to decide, like, when they draw the line. Well, it's like, do they go up to 30% of Avery, and then someone sells to 35, and then 10 more breweries sell at 35,
yeah.
and
yeah.
five more the next year, and then they start to wonder, like, should it be 35 now? So there has to be a line.
Really, I think this percentage designation is obsolete. I think what's really important is that like-minded breweries, in terms of ideals and missions and intent in the marketplace, band together, because I think we can all agree that Anheuser-Busch is the big kind of overlord entity that is trying to quash what is being done in craft beer. And so it's I think the frustration point from the Averys and the founders is, hey, we're trying to fight the same fight here.
Right.
We want to band together with you guys.
That's a scale that's like unfathomable to like most breweries.
Absolutely.
But I mean, New Belgium is on... Yeah. A much larger scale,
right? And they're trying everything
and
they can.
There's still part of this.
It's funny, they're being called sellouts without even selling out.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and that's a whole other point too. Like private equity.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, and you brought up Walmart. Like, well, Anheuser-Busch
is the Walmart.
Right. Well, they end up creating like some subsidiary that's just a PE branch
100%.
That can gobble up a company, but that company can still retain craft beer partnership. Like, is Oscar Blues is still a craft brewery, right?
Yeah.
They have massive funding. And like Firestone Walker and Boulevard, they have massive funding, but it's not another brewery. So
right.
Is that like, are the scales balanced? I don't know.
No. Anyway, I want
to
jump in and
respond to that because it really will be like another hour.
Yeah.
I think
take an intermission.
I think this is going to be further. I think this is, to me, this is the biggest kind of trend heading into 2018 is consolidation and acquisition, and all of this stuff is just going to continue to get even more and more convoluted because, you know, large regional breweries are starting to see market share diminish, and so they're having to make moves like the New Belgium acquisition of Magnolia. I think that was more of a kind of a conciliatory situation, but of assisting Magnolia. But you know, you see like the 21st Amendments and the Funkworks and Brooklyn Brewing coming together to form their own little subsidiary. You know, more of that stuff is going to happen in the next few years because as large regional breweries or mid-sized regional breweries start to feel the pinch, they need to consolidate in order to pull resources, pull knowledge and information, and then also pull a distribution network that can compete with the big boys and be able to grow their businesses in a thoughtful manner. So I think that's just going to continue. I think we're going to see more of that, and that's, for me, that is the biggest trend that you're going to see moving forward.
I mean, look at Wits End and Strange.
Yeah,
I
mean, even on a micro level, yeah.
So
I want to go around. Let's break up things a little bit. Let's jump into some of our breakouts and some of our best of in 2017. Sammy, I'm going to start with you. You're our newcomer. You're gonna dip your foot in the water real quick.
Dude, and I was in the car this morning being like, man, I got to find some answers for these questions.
let's start with some of the kind of the best new breweries in Colorado. And if you have anything on the national level, feel free to share it as well. I'm going to, for each of these categories, I'm going to allow you all to say your best of in Colorado. And if you have a national one, love for you to share that as well.
I appreciate that.
Sammy, best new brewery.
So I think Colorado-wise, there are a couple that stand out for me for sure. The guys at Outer Range have become great friends of ours at Cerebral.
Sure.
I think that their beers are fantastic. They kind of started canning at the same time that we started canning, and I see more and more of their beer around. Is Westbound and Down a year old, or is that 2016?
They're over a year.
Because I was up there, I don't know, a couple of months ago, too. New Image, they had a fun little event over GABF for all of the smaller, like, you know, hazy breweries, hazy IPA breweries, and they're fantastic up there too. I love everything that they're doing, especially Dyad, which is that kombucha, that half kombucha blend.
Yep.
That I love. Outside of Colorado, the beers that I've had that are standouts are definitely the ones that I had during JBF that were from breweries that I never had before. Maybe they're not new, but they were new to me. Fort George, I had their three-way, which is a collaboration. They do a collaboration every year with two other breweries, and it was this fantastic juicy IPA that was a highlight. To be honest, the Bourbon Barrel Aged Victory at Sea from Ballast Point, I had one of those a couple of days ago, and it knocked my socks off. Other than that, I cannot remember a single other beer that I've consumed this year.
Jesse, what about you?
You know, this is going to be like the cynic in me, but I feel like the breweries right now that are getting so much hype are so typically hazy IPAs-y. And I just cannot get into this craze, and I cannot get into what it's done to the industry, and I think it's hurting the industry more and more every single day. So many of these breweries, like almost every third Instagram post you see is someone's basically fermenter juice that they call a carbonated finished product. What I do like is breweries that can adapt and pivot, and it's not a new brewery by any means, but I really like what Hogshead's done in terms of shifting from necessarily always doing these English-style ales and cask ales to really focusing on a lot of American-style hoppy beers. And
Denver Pride's a great
it's
beer.
It's so
yeah.
good.
Super good beer.
And their American IPA is just a fantastic beer. So Jake over there and Alex over there, in my opinion, they knocked my socks off in that kind of shift that they made. And there's so much clarity in their beer. It's amazing.
Go for that.
I just love that I can see through it.
Sam, do you have any best ofs for the past year?
I've been trying to think it through pretty hard myself, and I mean, as far as Colorado breweries and like new breweries, I haven't really been to any new places. I've heard nothing but good thing about Woods Boss. I've talked to a few people about them, and I've been meaning to swing by and see what they got going on.
The space is super cool.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen pictures of the space. It looks badass.
Very folksy looking, kind of.
Yeah.
They've got so much wood.
So much wood.
So much
all
wood.
The wood.
All the wood. But if it's outside of, like, Colorado, I really do dig what Mitch is doing at Speciation right now.
Yep. That's on my list.
I know it's kind of like the Black Project, the wild fermentation. It's not the first brewery to do that, but to take that idea to an area that doesn't have anything like that, and it's even his business model is counter to what every brewery in West Michigan is doing right now, and the fact that he's succeeding with it makes me really happy to see that someone can take an idea out of the box and apply it in a place where, you know, West Michigan's got a really good brewery scene. It's not exploding quite like we have in Denver, but for the population amount they have there, it's very, very robust, and to see just someone going there and just kind of like mix it up with a whole different idea, I like to see that. And his beer is really good from what I've had of it. It's all been really fantastic.
Absolutely. I'm surprised. Speciation, I think, is getting a lot of national buzz now, but it's funny because even in the Michigan kind of blogosphere and message board sphere, like, you're not seeing a lot of people notice Speciation, but I think they're going to take notice very soon. Their Incipient series, you know, they do a lot of takes on Incipient, but that base beer is probably one of the more layered and complex beers I've had all year in terms of, like, a wild sour blend. Really tremendous, nuanced, like, delicate beer that, you know, it's not going to be hit you in the face with tartness. Instead, you get a very thoughtful kind of balanced acidity to it, and overall you get that kind of funk and fruit forwardness based on whatever fruits they decide to introduce to it. So yeah, big ups to Speciation out in Grand Rapids.
I'm a big baby when it comes to like sour beers, and
the incipients that I've had have all hit me just in the right amount of like tart sour level that I like to get into. So yeah,
I'm gonna throw it to you. What were some of your best new finds from this year?
And, so yeah, not a lot of breweries opened this year compared to 2015 was a big year. 2016 was pretty legit, but yeah, 2017 slow year. But I will say, just even on the past this past year and 2 years, I really like Outer Range. I like their branding a lot. I'm attracted to the brewery, and as far as the hazy styles go, I've enjoyed their beers. As far as styles go, kind of comeback styles, my preferred style, which is making a lot of presence now in craft breweries, is Pilsners.
Oh yeah.
Pilsners are becoming more seen now. Traditional American lagers as well. I'm sorry, German lagers. Just in general in craft beer, which I really truly enjoy. Not to be boring, I just like a good clean beer. I'm not saying I'm burnt out. It actually shows way more quality finesse, in a brewery, yeah. Finesse in general. Yeah.
For sure.
So I appreciate that. Outside of the state, they're not this, just this past year, but they were around during GABF in Denver. It was Modern Times. I still like high on that company being, you know, employee owned so quickly and growing so fast. I mean, what a company to be a part of early on. And their beers, I tried more stuff than I had in the, since first seeing going there in California. But around GABF, everything I tried from them was dialed. And
yeah.
Again,
they have the equation, man. I just think that if you're going to really open up multiple locations, the fact that they're roasting their own coffee too is like, that's that's just so smart. And I am waiting for somebody to start doing that here, to open up a brewer and a coffee roaster.
It'll be in Rhino. Don't worry.
I want to take a moment to point out, Modern Times for me is kind of like the breakout national brewery of
for
the year.
Sure.
Because, you know, you look at the fact that they're opening, I think
Portland.
They now have like five locations in California, and also they're opening up Portland. And then on top of that, they became fully employee-owned this year. And they may, I think, I can't remember how much beer they produce, but they're producing a shit ton of beer.
Yeah.
And on top of that, they're able to do that, like you said, with their own roaster, but also, you know, really capture that experimental side of things while also
being approachable,
maintaining their core lineup that's very solid all around.
Totally.
So Modern Times for me, them and Fremont Brewing, probably the two kind of big, like, statement breweries of the year from a national landscape. Now, on a local level, I want to give some of my picks. For best new breweries, I also have Outer Range on the top of that list. Right behind them, Amalgam, which maybe not this year, but maybe definitely next year. I think they're going to be the breakout brewery to kind of watch for. Amalgam spun off.
Right?
Yeah, Phil Joyce, who started Powder Keg, was a head brewer over at Powder Keg. He started a spinoff with Eric Schmidt, and they're focused on kind of spontaneous and wild. And their Ascension, which is kind of their first expression, was tremendous out the gate. We got to try a little bit of their composition, and then also their I think it was composition number one, and then they their handpicked series, which is going to focus on kind of foraged fruits and vegetables and goods as part of like that sour base. Handpicked Danube cherries was tremendous, and that's going to be releasing in 2018. They really are doing some tremendous stuff. I think Cellar West in Boulder, again on the sour train, really really tremendous. I think their head brewer kind of spun off of what was
Sinitas.
What was the brewery that they spun off of? I think it might have been Coda.
Zach,
yeah.
He was a Sinitas before that.
Sinitas, right. And then New Terrain also similarly. Their head brewer, I think, spun off Coda is the one.
Yep,
so,
totally.
New Terrain also pretty impressive this past year.
Yeah, and that, have you been to that space?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Dude.
Incredible.
It's so cool.
In terms of just like a thought-out brewery, New Terrain is just like well thought out in terms of layout, And how they've set up their entire brewery in Golden. So.
I actually forget how new they are because like their space is just
so bad.
That badass.
That's
you know?
Some aerospace money for you folks.
Yeah, is that what it is? Oh, all right.
Cellar West and Amalgam. I totally agree, man.
Yeah.
I'm honored to have like been a part of Peace and Assist with both of those guys, and those are the bottles that I'm excited to come back and try when I get back to Colorado.
I'm surprised nobody said that their favorite new styles pastry stouts here.
You'll have that. You got that.
Nobody?
I got diabetes.
They're pretty smooth to chug, but that's about they're good for.
Oh man.
They are pretty smooth to chug.
For breakout breweries in Colorado, breweries that had kind of the bigger one of the more I guess bigger more years. For me, I think the breakout breweries for this year were Four Noses, which I think they've quickly become one of the elite breweries in Colorado, quietly. I think they're often overlooked, but everything they brew has been really tremendous. And trip up there. Cerebral, not to toot anybody's horn over here, not to suck up, but I think Cerebral's had a tremendous year.
Definitely
had some acclaim for their hazy stuff, but honestly, I think you all are producing some of the best stouts and kind of roasty beers in the entire state of Colorado. My next breakout brewery is going to be a little bit of a surprise, Lone Tree. They had a huge year out at GABF, but they have successfully rebranded themselves in a big way, and the beers that they're producing right now are phenomenal. Their Mexican lager is one of my go-tos for just easy drinking beers. And if you haven't tried them yet, you gotta get your hands on some Lone Tree. And then Powder Keg, of course, again, talking about Phil, I think they've had a huge year in their releases. Coconut Telegraph was fantastic. Their Twilight Rendezvous was tremendous. And then all of their Super Void series recently, and their Double Dry Hop Keyboard Warrior, phenomenal stuff.
Whether you're planning to build out a larger beer cellar, shopping for a new home, or buying a new car, OnTap Credit Union provides the tools and services needed to help with any major life transition. Learn how OnTap Credit Union can help with home loans and streamlining financing for a new car. OnTap Credit Union also specializes in crafting banking solutions for you, the people who brew great beer, people who drink it, and the communities where they all reside and do business. Find out more at ontapcu.org. All right, folks, we often talk about First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen. They're the Pour Your Own Draft System located at 1309 26th Street here in Denver, Colorado. It's basically the adult version of Froyo. You can go in and try as much or as little as possible of up to 40 different styles of beer. It's your Pour Your Own Draft System, so you can pour a little bit or a lot. They've also got fantastic food. So visit First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen. Pour Your Own Draft System located at 1309 26th Street here in Denver, Colorado. Once again, that's First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen.
So I want to touch a little bit on favorite new beers or favorite beers from 2017. Overall, anything in Colorado that just blew your mind this year?
I'm going to take what you just said and double it. Four Noses, man.
Yep.
Fucking awesome.
I was actually just going to say Double Dry Hop about damn time.
They've been doing awesome stuff since they opened. And I don't know what took me so long to really have this epiphany, but I go there like every other week now, and a Double Dry Hop about damn time. I drink way too much of that for being broke as all get out. Bought way too much of that. I do not get into fruit beers all that often. Their Peachopotamus is phenomenal. The staff there, the beers, the people, everything about Four Noses to me, like Brewery of the Year and Double Dry Hop about damn time Beer of the Year. Like,
they're great to
those.
Troll. Great to troll.
Yeah.
I've been trolling them through 2017 on their Instagram account.
Yeah.
I bait Kyle pretty well. He runs the handle. Oh, yeah.
And it's funny because Tristan said, like, quietly growing, but you go in their tap room on a Wednesday and it's bursting at the seams. Like,
yeah.
And it's deservedly fast, yeah. So, but they're just. Well done for it. Way to go, Tommy.
What about you guys?
And team.
Any thoughts?
I think the beer of the year.
Yeah.
Beer style, like specific beer.
I know, Hunter, you might agree with me on this one, but one of my favorite beers from 2017 was Geisha from New Belgium.
I like Geisha a lot.
I haven't opened one yet,
purchase.
And I have to.
Oh, it's open it now.
Like yesterday is when I should have opened
it. Tough purchase, but maybe like go in halvesies with a friend and split the bottle. It is fantastic.
Was it great?
It's honestly great. Split the bottle four ways and you can get it down to $10 a person.
It's certainly the most balanced coffee beer I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah.
Most balanced coffee
like
sour.
One part sour, one part coffee. It's just perfect.
I'm so excited to try it.
Yeah. It's just expensive.
And then for me, a few other standouts. Peace Be the Journey, I think, might be the most under the radar beer that you all came out with. But I think that's probably the best one of that series.
And you know what? That's interesting. I popped one open last week and was blown away by it. It's an Imperial Coffee Stout collaboration with Horace Agedale.
Horace Grant. Collaboration with Horace Grant, Rex Specs. Sponsor.
Rex Specs.
Yeah. Horace Grant.
It's Jamaican coffee beans aged over Madagascar vanilla beans. And it's like...
It's like Weeby Jamin.
It's Weeby Jamin, yeah. 100%.
I also thought the Roswell series from Black Project was one of the more impressive series that debuted this year. And then, you know, I know that they've been getting a lot of flack recently, but the Media Noche Reserve that I tried from Weldworks, the multiple times that I had it were all perfection. It was absolutely tremendous. You know, Weldworks has been getting some flack for having infection. I think four of their six releases, their big bottle releases this year. But Media Noche Reserve, when I had it, still held up. One of the premier beers that I tried in 2017. Now, the most interesting beer for 2017, this is going to be a little Homerism, but I think King of Carrot Flowers from Ratio was definitely one of the more bizarre and unique, but like beers that actually worked.
Everywhere I go, people are drinking it.
Yeah.
I was at Sloan Stabbing Burger yesterday. Somebody just had it.
It's bright orange.
Like, it's unbelievable.
Bright orange in color. Utilizes carrot juice. Carrot juice and elderflower, tremendous, insane. It was something that I didn't think would sound good. It didn't sound good to me at first, but then when I finally tried it, my mind was blown.
It is one of those beers. You're not going to order it unless somebody forces you to. And the second you try it, you're happy that you're happy that you did.
Also for unique, interesting beers, Dry Logs Grand Blue, which is something that I tried at Crooked Staves. What the Funk. It is a blue cheese culture cultivated in the cask, and it was insane. It was so good.
Was it funky? Blue cheese funky? Man,
it was funky, but it was also sour funky as well, man, so it was like double layer.
Only like cheese that melts easily over a pizza. I do not like cheese of the blue variety.
I want to bring up true fermenting barrel states. That's weird.
Hunter just throwing it. It was weird.
Out of line.
Nick, a little out of line.
Is that all that matters anymore?
Crossbreeding. Yeah.
Now, Hunter, I think you'll agree with me. One tremendous new beer that was introduced this year was Fremont's Lush, right?
Oh, I love Lush.
Lush is great.
Yeah.
That lupulin powder,
Lush.
Straight to the dough.
Oh, it's amazing. That's what they make it with?
So we were drinking Lush during the Small Batch podcast.
Yeah.
And then they introduced this Field to Ferment series, too. And they are just crushing it.
Yeah, they're great.
Absolutely.
I wish Lush was a little cheaper. Yeah. In a market with so many good hoppy beers, $12.
Yeah, it is. It is a little pricey, especially when it's I mean, it's no Todd the Axeman from Surly, but it's trying to compete with beers.
I would take it over Todd the Axeman.
I think I would too.
Yeah, but not.
Jesse, any other favorites from you for the past year?
Well, that very
good. You know, you were talking about events, and obviously I spend a lot of time on events, but I think apart from like the larger 2,000, 3,000 people events, I think a lot of the like smaller events, like the ones Hops and Pie put on, like their sour events, their winter beer events, like their IPA events, which she was talking about earlier, the New Image Invitational, the Station 26 Invitational that they just had, Avery Sourfest year over year, like the Genius Wizard. Like, I think more like we do the Peace and Assist every year, the Rum Pie events. I think it's hard to get 2,000 people to have a like-minded idea they want to go to one event anymore. There's so many things to do in Colorado.
Totally.
So to have these smaller events, 200 to 1,000 people, I think those are the events that I really enjoy going to.
Freaking fucking jailhouse anniversary.
Yeah.
In BV was incredible.
Totally.
That was the first time that I met
the
you.
The Rapid Grass.
Yeah.
That probably stole the show.
Dude, I mean, that was the next day. That was an incredible first year event.
Yeah, agreed.
And I will be back year after year after year. It was well attended. It was super well organized. It was awesome.
And Sarah and Shane are incredible humans. Tons of Denver representation there. I thought it was going to be a lot of like BV folks. No. They were like, oh, I'm from Wash Park. I'm from Baker.
And that's the beauty. That's the beauty, though. I love going into BV or Poncha.
Salida.
Like, it is... It's 2.5 hours.
Right.
You feel like
it's one of the most beautiful settings to drink beer.
I love Rendezvous.
You don't gotta go on fucking 70. Yeah.
Exactly. It's the most beautiful drive.
A drive over Kenosha Pass is one of my favorite places in the entire
world. Rapids and Grass. I think that was probably top three events this year.
Well done, guys.
100%.
Nice. Well, Sam, anything else that you'd like to add? Best of 2017, your favorites? Any standouts?
Oh, man. Probably
that Lenny you chugged.
That chugged Lenny was pretty good. I mean, I also sipped on one.
Notes.
I sipped on one here at the brewery, and then I left you a really cool drunken message on a sticky note afterwards.
Yeah,
so
that was awesome. Thank you.
That was some good times. Honestly, 2017 was kind of a blur.
Man,
I might have overdid it.
Join the club.
Yeah,
I can't believe it's over.
Well, that's wild. You said that the Wicked Weed was in May, so I don't even know how we.
I'm from Lexington.
Was only 7 months ago.
We're recording a podcast right now.
Yeah, but that was the first podcast I think we did together.
Yeah, because wasn't that Coors too with No, that wasn't the first one. No, it was that Spice Tray.
Yeah, but it was right when Coors had come in.
Yeah.
And the day of the hailstorm.
I like to surround myself with controversy.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I want to say a big thank you once again to Jesse. Man, it's been tremendous having you on the show as a co-host for so long.
Going to miss you, old pal.
We're definitely going to have to come out to Madison. We might be visiting you as a side note to visiting Nuclearis.
Hard bite.
I'll tell myself you're coming out for me.
We'll come out. Maybe we'll do a broadcast from Great Taste in the Midwest. Do something like that.
Maybe CBC will go through one of these years or something like that.
But tremendous to have you as part of this ride thus far. And we wish you nothing but the best out there.
I appreciate it, man.
We're going to conclude this before we go drinking with you a little bit so that we can send you off in a big way. And I want to say a big thank you and a welcome to Sammy Hartman over here. We're really excited to have you on board on a much greater scale. And our next broadcast will likely be coming from Big Beers, Belgians, and Barley Wines in Breckenridge. We're going to be up there for one of the best beer festivals of the year. I can't wait.
I hope it still goes through, though.
Yeah.
The festival of being in jeopardy and all at the venue.
What?
Hunter's just got his own little inside joke going, so don't you worry about it, folks. We'll be broadcasting from Big Beers. If you have a chance to make it up there, please do come by and see us. We'll be sure to announce where we're going to be broadcasting from as soon as we nail down those details. This has been episode 46 of the Porchcast. A big thank you to all of our sponsors in 2017. We are looking for new sponsors in 2018, so if you're interested in joining the show, I mean, who doesn't know about First Draft Taproom and Kitchen?
Yes.
And On Tap Credit Union. Woo! And, all the tremendous sponsors and Chalk, made by Chalk, who designs beautiful websites. These have become household names, folks. You can become that name in 2018. So be sure to reach out to us if you're interested in sponsoring the show. We're going to have to pay for Hunter's El Camino tab in some way, shape, or form. So help contribute to that if you can.
It pays itself, kid.
Big thanks to Sam Sly, Jesse Brookstein, Hunter Grondin, and Sammy Hartman. This has been episode 46 of the Porchcast.
Check you later.
Like what you're listening to? Be sure to follow the Porchcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and whatever listening devices you may follow. You can also follow Porch Drinking on Twitter and Instagram at @porchdrinkingco.